Let's start off with you reading that little poem.
There's no poem.
There is quite the poem. Pick it up from the page and present it to the audience.
Thank you.
Use the Meisner technique.
When Bear Country's cubs...
Read the monologue.
This is my Sanford Meisner impression.
I know, you've done it before.
Read the monologue. Pick it up from the page and tell me what it says.
I don't even remember what he said. It's been a long time since I've read any Sandy Meisner. Okay, so anytime you're ready.
When Bear Country's cubs learn pollution's a fact, they help grown-ups learn to clean up their act.
Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I am your host, Phil Gonzalez, and this week I have a friend back with me. It's Mr. Mark Sweeney, and I'm very excited to have him back because I'm slowly pulling him into the world of my podcast, gradually, piece by piece.
He gets me on microphone to admit this to me. Hi, greetings, Phil.
Now you're trapped in the world
it's
of my show.
It's good to be here. I guess I'm a reoccurring guest.
You're a reoccurring
guest. Probably one
nightmare.
Of the most reoccurring guests. Oh, a nightmare. That's
sorry.
Very nice of you to say.
Just slipped that in. It's a reoccurring...
A walking nightmare.
You are a waking life. You are a rotoscoped animated feature film by Richard Linklater. Was that right? Is that what it is?
Yeah, that was the name of it.
I totally never saw it.
You are full of references.
I saw... What was the one he did? The Philip K. Dick
Sunrise?
One?
Oh, Scanner Darkly.
Scanner Darkly. I saw Scanner Darkly.
Are we going to start a Linklater podcast?
It'd be very short. Wouldn't it?
No.
I don't know how many films he has now.
A lot.
Because he sort of slips him by. He's like...
Boyhood.
That's right.
Keep going back. The Before
but
Sunrise.
But he didn't make anything for 13 years while he was making Boyhood.
That's true.
His constant production
he had
cycle.
Bad News Bears remake.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. He had his commercial.
Did he do one that was like a period piece? Did he do a period piece? Did he do... What did
he did Fast Food Nation.
No. Didn't he do one that was about a bunch of guys committing a crime or something? Oh, this is going to drive
earlier
me nuts.
Stuff?
Maybe when I was in college.
Yeah,
I don't remember.
Texas. Texas filmmakers.
He went through like a period, like a slump, like a little like weird, like I don't know if I'm going to be.
Newton Boys?
Newton Boys. Was that his?
Maybe.
The Newton Boys?
Maybe.
Did he do the Newton Boys?
I don't know
boys?
Where I pulled that out
the
of.
The Newton Boys. That's how I had a friend who would always say it like that. The Newton Boys. It may have been. That may have been Linklater. Mm-hmm. But yeah, School of Rock. How many of his movies have been turned into musicals?
That's it.
Just
because
School of Rock?
Yeah, otherwise they would be long and talky. That's kind
there
of a signature.
A slacker musical? No. It seems like that's a good, long and talky isn't a bad thing for a musical. It kind of writes itself.
Sure.
Put a little music underneath them, the lyrics, like Sweeney Todd, like Sondheim did with Sweeney Todd.
So like a Before Sunrise musical?
You could do a Before Sunrise trilogy musical, like one act, second act, third act.
Yeah.
And then it really ends on a down note.
Right. I had a fringe show a few years ago that was somewhat of an attempt to do kind of a walking, talking, Linklater meets musical.
But this,
thing.
You wouldn't actually have the audience walking. You would just be like, right. It would be on Broadway. And they would, and the audience would buy a ticket and they'd sit. It'd be like a.
But Boyhood on Broadway.
Hey.
Hey.
And then you could, like, how would you do that?
I think the good thing about Linklater is he realized that, you know, his medium is film and could not be adapted
could
to stage.
A 13 act musical. It could be that Harry Potter musical. Like, you have to come back every year to see, like, the next part.
It could be.
It could be.
It could be.
It's not a musical. That wasn't a Harry Potter musical. That was just a Harry Potter play.
Talking films and music.
This is the world we live in. The world of speaking of pollution.
Yes.
1991's The Berenstain Bears Don't Pollute.
Parenthetical. Anymore.
Anymore. The Berenstain Bears Don't Pollute Anymore. Mal, you are aware of a frequent guest of the show, Brad Mariska. You know Brad Mariska?
I am aware of him, yes.
The Brad Mariska has a recurring joke he likes to play, a joke he likes to pull, like a witticism.
Right, right.
He likes to do online.
Yeah, tell
where
me about
he, where he'll mention a Berenstain Bears book title.
Yes.
But before he says the name of the title, he'll say, spoiler alert, they do. This, I feel, is the only title that really is a spoiler alert. Like, it's literally like...
It gives away the ending.
It gives away the ending. Like, it should be the Berenstain Bears pollute. Mm-hmm. And then you find out at the end that they stop.
Oh, yeah. Set up. Yeah, but perhaps in this one, it's more about the journey.
I mean, because the other books aren't like the Berenstain Bears and too much junk food that they used to eat.
Right.
Or the Berenstain Bears and... There's no books that are like the Berenstain Bears don't tease each other anymore. It's just the Berenstain Bears and too much teasing. Or the Berenstain Bears and the parents will no longer throw too large of birthday parties for them. It's the Berenstain Bears and too much birthday.
Right.
Like, I feel like this should be like the Berenstain Bears and all the pollution that they do. But instead, we get a weird parenthetical. It's such a weird thing. I actually argued with my child this morning over whether it was called the Berenstain Bears don't pollute or don't pollute anymore.
Who was on what side?
I was on the don't pollute anymore side because I'm an intelligent adult and I've read things and I memorized things with my adult brain. Mm-hmm. My 6 going on 7-year-old insisted it was not called don't pollute anymore. She was wrong because she's a small child with a very underdeveloped brain.
But she enjoys a good argument.
She enjoys a good argument and a good Berenstain Bears book. Mark, the last time we talked on this show, you and I did a running commentary on an episode of the Berenstain Bears.
Oh, it's true.
Berenstain Bears cartoon. Last time we discussed a book, though, it was about sort of this very thing.
It's true.
It was about...
environmental. It was about deforestation. It was about protests.
Saving the animals.
Saving the animals. It was also about the power of children.
Mm-hmm.
And the power in which children can influence adults.
Right. And in a way, it's... in a way, the Berenstain Bears Don't Pollute Anymore is kind of a prelude to that. Like, or the one we read, Chainsaw Gap.
Chainsaw Gap, yeah.
It's kind of an expansion of this book in a little bit of a way.
Yeah, I would say a prelude. A Chainsaw Gap seems a little more mature in that.
Was it? Like,
I don't know. Well, yeah, that's a good... actually, yeah, this seems like the younger... It follows a similar storyline, doesn't it?
Yeah. With the cutting down of the trees and Papa Bear and...
and the kids realizing their influence.
Yeah. I feel like... well, not to jump ahead, but I feel like this book almost pulls it off better because it keeps it simple as opposed to, like... if you remember, Chainsaw Gap got all, like, weird and convoluted and, like... you thought it was going to be about protest, but then, like, the protest didn't really come into it. And then Mama solved it all with her helicopter or something.
Yeah. They literally swooped in a helicopter.
Yeah. And everyone was like, let's change our minds. Let's not do this anymore.
Right. But this one, the kids take action in their own hands, influencing the adults. And even though it jumps pretty quickly to that ending, which we'll get to, they learn how to get there.
And it makes the point at the end that, like, this, they didn't really solve everything.
Right.
They're like, this didn't solve everything. It's an uphill battle.
Yes.
But let's...
and then on the simpler side of things, I also feel that this book uses some pretty tired tropes to kind of... I'm just saying there wasn't much research put into, like, what we're doing or what we aren't doing to help the environment. It's pretty much... you know, the stuff any person who's learned anything about pollution in the last 30 years. Granted, this book is now
30 years
old. So, yeah. So it's a little weary, but...
it's a product of its time.
Sure.
I would say.
Right, because we're just starting to kind of have this conversation on these terms.
Right.
Back in 91, did you say it was?
This is 91.
Yeah, and I remember, like, Earth Day was... kind of became a bigger deal in the early 90s. So we started making more of these kind of like all your characters had Earth Day or pollution messages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This book feels very much like it's time for your pollution book.
Mm-hmm.
Go for it. But it does use as many tropes that you see in like any like after school special or Saturday morning episode that deals with pollution. Like,
yeah.
Let's talk about the book because it also addresses things like a remarkably in-depth perspective, which is perspective, which is there's your macro view of the world and then your micro view of the world.
Yeah.
And when you take a macro look at the world, you can sort of like ignore a lot of the problems. When you sort of like step back and you are looking at things from far away, things can look fine. Sometimes you have to dig down and see that there's unhappiness below the surface.
And also seeing the world through other species points of view.
Mm-hmm. Like bears.
Like bears or fish.
Right.
a fish's eye view.
Fish eye, yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like an old rap video.
Yes. You
know, Missy.
Also from the early 90s.
Yeah, Missy Elliott. Mm-hmm. She one of the rappers?
That was directed by a fish.
Fish Police.
The Fish Police. That was an animated cartoon.
There was an animated cartoon that came around at the same time as Capital Critters.
Ooh. Now you're hitting my sweet spot.
Primetime cartoons.
Primetime's reaction to The Simpsons.
Yeah, exactly. Primetime cartoons that attempted to catch that Simpsons wave, but didn't quite get what The Simpsons were doing, mm-hmm. which was not just make a cartoon that had some strippers in it sometimes. Because mm-hmm. I think that's what Fish Police did.
Yeah, I was more of on the Capital Critters side of things.
They tried to do political humor, right?
But softly, probably.
But it was basically just the Littles in the White House.
Exactly. That's exactly what it was.
What if the Littles were in the White House and they were just actually mice?
Right.
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 Yeah.
All right.
So for those of you out there looking for something to...
Still in the early 90s.
Yep. This is all early 90s stuff. This is again, sweet spots. What's this book about?
Well, it starts off with an article in the Bear Evening News. The Evening News, which is a newspaper that gets delivered to the Bears every evening.
Every evening. The Bears paper gets delivered on the hour.
And there's an article written by Actual Factual.
Is it about Actual Factual, by Actual Factual, or about Actual Factual? That's easy, the headline.
You know, it looks like.
Leading scientist claims bear country is in serious trouble. It can't be by Actual Factual, because that'd be a heck of a headline to write for your own.
Well, it does say he got the byline too, doesn't it?
Does it say he's got the byline? No, it says he's got the headline. There's a big story too, said Papa, and a headline. Your friend Actual Factual's got his picture in the paper.
Yeah.
Like, I would think so if it was his byline. That article he wrote has his picture next
right.
to it.
Right. Okay. So it's just
I think
headline.
You're wrong.
So it's about him. I was wrong. I was wrong. I read this 10 minutes ago, and I can't retain. I'm on the side of your 7-year-old.
No, Actual Factual is like one of those smart people who can't write very well. So.
Oh, okay.
That's what I believe.
So they interviewed him, and he said that the bear country is in serious trouble. It's pollution. The problem is... That there's a big fuss about pollution is what Papa Bear says. And, you know, Papa Bear in his fashion says that there's nothing. That's not a big deal, you know.
Yeah.
Actual Factual's a great scientist, but I'm not against pollution. I just don't think a couple of candy wrappers, drinking cups is the end of the world.
Yeah, and to prove it, he takes them outside and shows them how beautiful bear country is.
It's true. And I wasn't expecting this to happen, but Brother Bear points out that, you know, that great sunset is actually possibly caused by some chemicals in the air.
Yeah, and Papa tells him to shut up.
Well, using his coined catchphrase, piffle.
Piffle, which has become a catchphrase this book.
In this book, he says it about 5 times.
Yep, piffle.
Piffle.
And he literally tells the kids to shut up and go to their homework.
He essentially says, hey, stop spouting out facts and go learn more facts.
Yep. Maybe it's Sunday school homework. We don't know.
So they go and learn or they go and study, and Brother Bear is confused. He's supposed to be writing an essay about endangered species.
Mm-hmm. Why is he confused? Why does that confuse him?
He just doesn't know what species he should write about.
He doesn't know what species are? Teacher Bob's a terrible teacher.
None of the books are giving him the information that's helpful.
Right. And then when the narrator kind of takes us out of the book and says, like, so Papa Bear showed you, like, their, like, bear's eye view of the world.
But, yeah. And the world might be okay from a bird's eye view.
Right.
But as we were saying earlier... the book takes into account the views of different species. So
yeah.
We have a squirrel, which is like dealing with deforestation and losing food, and a duck who's looking at pollution, and the tried and true fish, and that, you know, classic pollution trope of the rings from your soda beverages.
Soda beverages.
Thank you.
The trees are all being cut down. There's garbage in the rivers and on the banks and the lake. Forget about it. It's just a nuts nightmare.
Yeah.
Like that's just, they're using that for anything they can put in there. This is a recurring theme in Bear Country because we covered it in Chainsaw Gap, which was deforestation. In the coughing catfish, we find out that they just have been using the Lake Grizzly as like a dumping ground. Like everyone just takes their garbage to Lake Grizzly and throws it in. So it's just funny to me that like the bears, I don't know, you were talking off mic about how realistic is this? Like just the fact that like it seems like a cliche, like that there's like soda cans and
it now seems like a cliche for sure. Plates.
But growing up, I grew up in Texas.
Right.
And I think I discussed this on the show a year ago. We had the Don't Mess with Texas campaign.
Okay.
Started in the 80s, which was basically the Texas version of the I Love New York campaign. The don't,
right.
The stop polluting our streets and our roadways. Because in Texas, like I remember when I was a kid, like you'd be driving down the freeway and people would open up their window and literally just dump garbage, all their garbage out of the car, like while you were driving. And that was just the thing. You didn't even notice it. Like people were just, you done finishing your fast food. You throw the wrappers and the bags out of your car and you just keep going. So they started Don't Mess with Texas, which was basically like appealing to state pride to say like, yeah, don't you mess up our.
Keep this place beautiful.
Yeah. So when I see this, it reminds me of growing up.
I know. It seems so long ago, Phil. I've almost forgotten that this was a habit of humans and bears.
And bears.
To throw our trash out the window.
Strangely enough, though, in real life, that could attract bears.
It's true. Throwing your trash out the window could attract bears.
Mm-hmm. Many with time, I'd be on the freeway and Texas, and there'd be bears just chasing after my car, looking for more of that good trash.
And those Texas bears.
Mm-hmm. I think we have bears in Texas. Did we have bears in Texas?
That probably is for another podcast.
I don't think I ever ran into one. We had snakes, cottonmouth rattlers.
Neat.
Anyways, the kids go to visit Actual Factual because they're worried, and this is all they know how to do.
It's true. And he already seems upset for some reason. Maybe someone damaged his dinosaur because he seems to be repairing it.
Dragonsaurus Rex, whatever this thing is. Yes.
Barosaurus, yeah.
Monstrosaurus rocks. It's not a real dinosaur. It looks like a mythological creature.
We'll talk about that some other time.
Yeah.
Brother Bear asks for help on his report, and Actual Factual surprises him by saying that he should do his report on endangered species about the bears, the citizens of Bear Country,
right.
That in fact, they are becoming the endangered species. And the kids just don't understand what that means.
Mm-hmm.
So Actual Factual says, hey, get in my Actual-Factual mobile and I will drive you around and take you on many adventures to show you exactly what I'm talking about.
Let's stop for a second. Let's discuss the spelling of the Actual Factual mobile. And the look of the Actual Factual mobile and everything about the Actual Factual mobile.
It is a very wide truck.
Imagine a truck that is a perfect cube. Like, I mean, it's wider
it's
than
like
it is long.
Kleenex box.
Yeah. It's wider than it is long. It's very squat. I don't understand. Like, nothing has ever looked like this. This is not a vehicle that ever existed in the world. But
it would be like if wind, like there's nothing aerodynamic about it. Mm-hmm. Feel like if you're driving too fast, it would just get blown to the side, maybe.
It's the least scientifically minded thing I've ever seen in my life. It is a box on wheels. So you were confused, and then it confused me about the fact that it's called the Actual Factual Mobile.
Factual mobile is one word.
Uh-huh.
Those should be separate, right?
Right. You think it'd be just one word, like the Actual Factual Mobile. Or hyphenated twice. Actual Factual Mobile.
Ooh, I like that.
Because the way it's spelled, it's like this is the Actual Factual Mobile.
It's true.
Not like the other factual mobiles right. That you may see driving around your town. Mm-hmm. And the final thing I wanted to point out, something you noticed, was are those real tools on the side of the car or are they pictures?
If they're real tools, that's giant. The top one, which is some sort of kind of like artifact axe, is huge.
There's at the bottom is a pick, in the middle is a shovel, and on top is like a stone tool, like a stone axe, stone hatchet.
Yeah. Hatchet, yeah.
But they seem to be actually hanging on the side, though. They're brackets.
Right, that wouldn't be a logo. That would be something he put on the side of his mobile. And then, yeah, it says it was a special van with all kinds of scientific gear in it.
Mm-hmm. But if you notice the hatchet, the stone hatchet, isn't the line on the head of it isn't as bold as the rest of it. Like,
true.
The other two are inked in. That one looks like a line drawing almost. I'm wondering if, like Marty McFly in Back to the Future, this hatchet is from the wrong time, and now it's, like, slowly fading from existence.
As the future of the Bears stop existing. Right. Maybe there's a sub-story about the hatchet.
Right.
That once you see what happens in the future of this book, the hatchet comes back to life. Zoop. And they saved the existence of the Bears.
Speaking of Chuck Berry.
Yes.
Who was one of the musical
guests at Gorge Washington for the 20th anniversary of Earth Day? Was the musical headliner was Chuck Berry himself. The
musical headliner was Chuck Berry. Did they do a song featuring Chuck Berry for Earth Day?
Yeah, it's a good question.
I know that they did a song for Earth Day, though.
Oh, yes. There was like a benefit with many country stars
featuring the vocal stylings of
no one I could identify,
right?
According to the Wikipedia page,
it was bereft of Willie Nelson,
right?
like
he was saving farms,
right?
Not the earth.
Yep, saving Private Ryan. All right, so they loading up their cube vans, and they go on a little tour, a little trash tour of Bear Country.
It's true. It's a trash tour. They witness a lot of pollution. Let's just say that there is an auto mechanic right next to a river.
his mechanic shop isn't even indoors. The car is on a lift, not a yard from the river.
And the oil is pouring into a bucket that's overflowing.
Into the river.
Into the river. Killing fish.
Literal dead fish.
While a duck's like, what is, what? Huh?
What the, yeah.
Yeah. And then they witness black smoke coming out of the old box factory.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go scuba diving.
Yep.
Because Actual Factual carries a variety of scuba gear.
We know that Actual Factual is a scuba person. He teaches the bears to scuba dive in the Bear Scouts books. And he and the original Coffee and Catfish. The picture of Actual Factual and the two cubs is almost identical with the cover of the original Coffee and Catfish storybook.
It's true.
Fascinating to me, this one person. but we do know that Actual Factual is quite the scuba man.
And then they witness that kind of what's become a very cliched trope of the fish with its head in the beverage ring.
Yeah, and it says they cut it loose, but they couldn't rescue all the fish from the plastic holders carelessly thrown away.
Isn't that birds we're worried about?
Why couldn't they rescue all the fish?
They didn't have enough oxygen in their tanks.
Their scissors were too dull.
Yeah.
Like, at what point were they like, sorry? Yeah. Like, were the fish like starting to line up and they were like, we are short on time, gang?
Sometimes there's just too much pollution.
Sometimes there just aren't enough rocks. All right.
And there's a rusty mattress.
Yep.
On the bottom of a lake. It could happen.
I think in one of the versions of the Coffee and Catfish, someone catches a rusty mattress when they're trying to get the giant Coffee and Catfish.
Folks, we need to do better with our mattresses.
Yes.
You can recycle them at the city recycling plant
right here
in Minneapolis, if you're listening.
If you don't like your Casper mattress within 90 days, you can just return it.
We're not even getting money for that.
You don't have to throw it in the lake.
Yeah, but don't throw your mattress in a lake.
Fortunately, there's
unless you think it's a raft.
Maybe it doubles the raft. Do Casper mattresses double as rafts?
They open quickly, so maybe they're like full of air.
Do you know what Casper mattresses are made of?
Air?
Foam and like covering. It's like $50 worth of material at most.
Hmm.
Like the collapsible foam mattress industry is quite the racket.
We're never getting that
advertisement. We're never going to get that advertisement. The collapsible foam mattress industry is a thing. Apparently, they're very comfortable, but man, oh man, that's not a whole lot of like expensive materials. So then they're driving through the forest on a trail that is appropriately wide for the giant cube van.
But only that wide.
Right. And there's chopped down trees.
Right.
And it seems like Actual Factual is having a bit of a like personal crisis here.
He is. He's like, you know, I did that story in the evening news, but you know what? I don't think it did any good. And the kids are like, well, maybe it didn't do any good for grownups, but we can get the message out to kids. And Actual Factual's like, I hadn't thought about that before. let me call your teacher and immediately get a teaching spot over at your school to tell everyone about ecology and conservation.
Right. And this you asked me this question, which is, in Bear Country, do scientists hold like a powerful sway over the educational
system?
Yeah.
Can they just show up in classrooms and teach? Because that would be kind of neat, I guess.
How many scientists did you know as a kid?
Mm.
Like, not like a friend of the family who's a scientist, but like your local, your friendly neighborhood scientist.
Yeah.
Was that a thing? Like, was I missing it? I didn't grow up in Chicago.
Well, I grew up in Motorola was in the home in my hometown. So a lot of friends' parents were engineers, but no neighborhood scientists. But no, like, scientists who live in a tree at the end of the street.
But there wasn't like, we have a question about this science-y thing. Let's go ask old scientist Jones up the road. Okay.
Libraries are good for that, too.
They have a library in Bear Country. It's such a strange thing. Mm-hmm. I guess they have their own museum. I don't know. I never really understood actual factuals like
he's real a, world equivalent.
Right. He's a scientist but he's also a museum curator and museum manager.
And he has time to go bust in on classrooms.
Plus he can leave his museum whenever he wants. Mm-hmm. So they go to Teacher Bob's class and he teaches them about
these three items, ecology, conservation, and recycling.
Now you had said that when you used to work for Climb Theater.
Yeah, which is an educational theater company. It would go in classrooms and perform theater that eventually got to a valuable message for kids.
Then there was a point in each show where you would stop and be like,
get to the information,
hammer this info.
Yeah, and it would definitely be repeated three times. And that's what you have right on this page. You have two sentences in a row repeating ecology, conservation, recycle. The other side of the page, you have an illustration for the more visual learners who still have to read ecology, conservation, recycle.
So it's kind of a shrewd move on their part.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Pretty good work.
So this group of small children who have brains that haven't quite developed yet come up with some ideas that actual factual couldn't think of.
It's
which,
true.
About doing something about pollution.
And all of them kind of relate to how they can influence their parents, even though some of their efforts might not be as won over, like wouldn't work as well. As you point out, that Babs Bruno is going to tell their dad that the chief of police to change the law, right?
There ought to be a law about this.
There ought to be a law.
I'm like, the chief of police doesn't really have that kind of sway, kid. I mean, you could tell him to like go, you know, I guess like arrest some more people or like set up a sting operation. I don't know. I don't even know what chief of police does. Certainly not in Bear Country. So there's that. There's
why does Tootall get a chair?
A stool? He gets his own personal stool.
Yeah, and he's kind of been skeptical from the beginning. Well, So
Tootall, Tootall sitting on a stool in class. He comes up with the idea of his uncle owns a super duper market, which I did not know. Like, right. That changes a few dynamics.
Sure.
The Berenstain Bears in the Super Duper Market was a book. I did not know that this was a relation to Tootall Grizzly. It surprised me. He says he started bag return for reusing bags. So the Cubs come up with many, many wonderful ideas for saving Planet Bear.
And their best idea, apparently, is to start a Earth Savers Club.
Not their idea. Cousin Freddy's idea.
I apologize. All credit goes to Cousin Freddy. And they are going to make posters, bumper stickers, and have cleanups and marches and parades.
What's the difference between the march and the parade?
Parade usually has a musical component to it.
Although giant puppets.
Although I would say a march and a parade should be pretty close. I mean, I think marches should be more like parades, right? We should make them like fun to watch. They should be celebratory, but also have a point.
Like even protest marches?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, this isn't fun to watch at all.
Yeah, exactly. Have you seen protest marches that are like dance parties?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Save the Earth.
It's happening.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm not privy to that.
I've seen it on the internet.
That's where most protests should happen. On the internet.
I don't agree with that.
Mark
Phil,
Sweeney
but
said it here. So there's many wonderful ideas. Teacher Bob is thrilled. Actual Factual is thrilled. And Papa still says piffle.
He's just full of piffle. What? I didn't say that.
Because not only does he not think that deforestation is a problem, it's so hard to plant trees. And anyway, who cares about trees? They're just trees.
But that's his job, right?
It's literally his livelihood.
Yeah.
If he runs out of trees, he's done for.
Right. Like, he would care the most about growing more trees.
Right.
So he could have a job.
Yes. What he should do. So the book makes mention a couple of times of Papa and his fellow woods bears. So he's obviously not the only bear in town who's cutting down trees. Mm-hmm. What Papa should do if he was smart, he should buy a huge plot of forested land.
Yeah.
And then charge the other woods bears to use it.
Yeah.
It doesn't have anything to do with the environment. I just thought that that would be a good, like, investment on his part.
That's not related to that, to the chainsaw gap, is it?
No. Nope.
No, they were just going
to... Someone else owned that land.
Right.
Squire Grizzly owned that land.
Squire Grizzly.
I think Papa... I don't know. I think, like, Papa's sort of stuck in a cycle. I think he should invest his money a little bit more.
Yeah, Papa's can get pretty tunnel vision, pretty narrow-minded about things.
And his livelihood seems pretty limited as far as, like... Bear country is growing. Like, pretty soon, people are going to stop ordering just custom furniture.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sooner or later, you're going to be put out of business.
Mm.
And he doesn't seem to be, like, looking into other avenues.
But also, he should, like, open, like, an Etsy store or something. So, or Papa Bear's...
Bertsy.
Yeah.
Because Squire Grizzly's only going to need so many chairs.
He primarily makes chairs for Squire Grizzly?
Yes. Squire Grizzly's his number one customer.
Wow.
Not only chairs, but...
Yeah,
that mansion's just going to get chock-a-block full of wooden pieces of furniture.
Yeah.
So Papa is piffling left and right, and that night he has a patented Stan and Jam Berenstain, Berenstain Bears plot-specific nightmare.
In which a tree haunts him.
Mm-hmm.
Walks after him, grasping, you know, the branches turn into reaching, grasping arms. This is classic Berenstain Bears, right?
Yep.
Fear of trees.
Well, it's classic bears. Every bear has these, like...
Oh, yeah. This happened in the... Yep. The dream. Yeah, mm-hmm. The nightmare.
Not even as a bad dream. Every so often, there will be, like, a weird, like, oh, this came out of left field. Like, and it's not just that they have a bad dream and it sort of explains their anxieties. It changes their thought. Like, it changes... Your dream is your subcon... Like...
Yeah.
I don't know. This doesn't really happen, Papa.
Right. Like, has anyone had a bad nightmare and it really just changed their, like, whole point of view?
Well, especially because, like, Papa doesn't care about the trees. And then he has a nightmare where he's being tormented by killer trees.
Mm-hmm.
And then he wakes up and he's like, I guess I better not cut down the... But he's smart. He knows that killer trees aren't actually going to come after him.
Or does he?
I guess it's true.
It's never proven.
What's funny is he wakes up screaming help. Mama says, having a nightmare? And he's all, it must have been something I ate. And she said, or something you heard, perhaps, about trees.
You know, for a man who cuts trees for a living, it's surprising he hasn't had this nightmare yet, right?
Or just dreams about trees in general.
Yeah. Maybe they caress
him. How did Mama know he had a dream about trees? I don't understand. She's like, about trees? I'm like, was he screaming the trees?
The branches, no.
The faces. And he says piffle.
Piffle. We should have counted. We should have had a piffle count. Yeah.
Piffle.
And then jump ahead a few weeks.
Yeah, the thing, there is quite a leap. I thought I had lost a page in the book.
Yeah.
Because the next page, we just get this big spread of a parade with the Earth Savers Club. And they are just like having a big... a kickoff celebration to raise awareness. There's literally a sign that says, be aware, be a conservation bear.
Mm-hmm. Brother and sister march at the head of with Professor Actual Factual holding a sign that says, Cubs for clean, lakes and streams.
Yeah, and there's also a pun that says, every litter bit hurts.
Oh, pollution's a fact, so clean up your act.
Which they used on the cover as well.
Now, Papa and Mama is holding a sign that says, help save tree, be a super duper bag returner.
No, that's not.
Oh, I see. That's
too
tall.
Too tall. And it says, or else. See, he got his little, he's leaning in. He got that thread in.
I thought Mama was holding that sign and Papa was holding the one behind it, but you're right.
Nope, we don't get the reveal on Papa Bear's sign until the next page.
So it says the mayor declared a special holiday called Earth Savers Day, not Earth Day.
No.
That's taken.
Yeah. Registered trademark.
And the Cubs had a big parade. Brother and sister marched at the head of Actual Factual. Last page.
And there were many grown-ups at the parade, too, including Papa Bear, who carried a sign that did not say
piffle. Although it would have been awesome if they had been holding a sign that just said piffle. What does his sign say?
A good woods bear plants a tree for every single one he cuts. No ifs, no ands, no maybes or buts.
So we began the book with a little poem. We ended the book with a little poem. Mm. And he's giving Mom that weird look.
They're both side-eyeing each other.
I don't know why. Maybe it's because like there's an inside joke about like butts. I don't know. That's like that's all I can think because it's a weird look.
She's like, I told you. And he's like, why are you making me do this? Or yeah, or there's some sort of weird undertone that I don't understand.
It's unfathomable.
In the bear country.
It's a bear expression. It doesn't translate to human. And that's it. So they, one thing I like, they make this point. It says the Cubs didn't expect to solve all of Bear Country's pollution problems, but the Earth Savers Club made a very good start.
Yeah, I think that's really important, especially for a book that's so simple and so general, that this is a starting point.
Yeah.
That this is a jumping off point. Please don't use this book to learn all you need to know.
Yeah.
There's a lot more to learn out there. It's a good start.
I like the fact that it teaches kids about not only awareness raising, but action, like taking action. Like it teaches you've got to like teach people about the problem, but also offer them things they can do.
Which that longer book didn't.
Right.
That longer book was like, take action. Oh, action got cut off. No one learned their lesson. Mama saves the day. This one's like, we created a club. We're marching for awareness, and others have options too.
Yeah, and we've got like the bag return started. Babs is going to talk to her father. We don't know if it's going to like help, but it's something she can do. Papa is going to reconsider his like tree planting policy. It's something that we talk about in the nonprofit world, which is, you know, like raising awareness isn't enough. Like you've also,
it's not the end point,
right? You've got to also like be like, now that you know this, here are a few simple things you can do. They've got to be like two or three simple actions people can take. And I like that this book is wise enough to show the bears doing that,
and it's wise enough to say that this is a good place to start.
I would say that for me personally, The Berenstain Bears Don't Pollute Anymore is not the most exciting book about the Berenstain Bears.
I agree. I've read more exciting Berenstain Bears.
Not a whole lot happens. You do get some cute pictures. Papa being chased by the trees is one of my personal favorites.
Papa waking up from his nightmare. He's got an incredible mouth in that picture.
Yes, he's got a good Papa Bear mouth. I actually made that my profile picture on Facebook.
I knew I'd seen that before.
I like any time that the characters go around Bear Country.
Yeah, I always enjoyed that as a kid too, seeing the expanded Bear Country.
Yeah.
But why do you enjoy it?
Partly because like whenever they do it, it's usually to show you what horrible things are happening in Bear Country. As the book makes the point of the importance of different perspectives. It gives the reader different perspectives on the problem.
Yeah, that's really important. I'm amazed that they use the phrase, every litter bit hurts, 3 times in
they
this
do?
Book. Yeah, it's on the front page, it's on the last page, and then when the kids are making a sign.
Where are they making a sign?
And the Earth when they decide to start the Earth Savers Club.
Oh.
There's another sign that says, every litter bit hurts.
Every litter bit hurts.
They were just the who was illustrating this, Phil, at the time.
This was either Stan or Jan.
They really thought they were hitting gold.
You know, I'm going to assume that that's a Stan Berenstain thing. He was the I just figured out that you can double tap on this and get an enlarged image in front of you. Sorry, I'm learning things about my Kindle. There's a bumper sticker that says "Don't speed, save gas." That they've written.
I can see it.
Don't speed, save gas. They have, we're all Earth's creatures.
That's like a really, that for as light as that's written, that's like a very detailed like bit of information that I didn't expect to see in this book.
Don't speed, save gas?
Yeah, like the fact that speeding can spends more gas.
Love Mother Earth, save the Earth. We're all Earth's creatures, save us all.
Yeah, that's
pretty intense.
It's kind of fatalistic there. A little bit. For Sister Bear is a little more intense than Brother Bear, right?
Oh, yeah. She's she takes things very seriously. So, yeah, I think this book has some really nice little details like that. Like, it's sort of full of little, like, visual Easter eggs.
Yeah.
For
Which
you to...
I always enjoyed as a kid looking at all those details and the illustrations.
Yes.
Sure. So it does a good job of the not just the story being told, but the picture selling the story to even further extent.
Yes. Very, very well put. That's one of the things I always liked about Stan and Jan's illustrations is they flowed well, they flowed nicely, and they carried you through the story. You had mentioned when you started reading this book that it's a lot more dense than some of the other storybooks.
Not that I have a problem reading words, but yeah, it's just there seem to be denser amounts of storytelling happening as far as words for a Berenstain Bear book. What?
For story. No, I couldn't actually think of a better way to put it either myself. Yeah, it's true. It's like paragraphs.
Right.
As opposed to like short sentences and like monologues, like actual factual goes off on rants a couple of times.
Yeah. And like the narrator steps out and makes points once mm-hmm. in a while. So, yeah.
So the Berenstain Bears Don't Pollute Anymore, 1991, the year after Earth Day's 20th anniversary celebration. Mark Sweeney, do you recommend this book for someone's Berenstain Bear bookshelf?
It's a good addition. I wouldn't put it in my top 10.
Yeah.
But, you know, it starts a conversation. I'm sure there are better books about learning more about the environment. But if you're a big Berenstain Bear fan, it's a good starting point.
Yes. And as I agree, It's a good start to a conversation, as we mm-hmm. as we've said. I think that it's fine. If you have it, it's fine. You can buy it on Kindle or whatever your e-reader of choice. What I like about the electronic edition is it's formatted still just like the original book, so you don't lose any of the illustration. The words are still there. They haven't messed around with it or anything. They haven't redrawn anything. It's still in your two-page spread, so you don't lose any of the dynamic artwork. The splash page with the title, Berenstain Bears Don't Pollute Anymore, is wonderful. It's, if a little misleading, it shows the bear family walking through the woods,
oh, yeah.
eating garbage and throwing it on the ground, and Officer Marguerite tapping Papa on the shoulder, none of which has anything to do with what happens in the story, but it is a funny picture.
It's also funny Papa Bear is eating a whole banana. He just took the complete peel off.
And is holding the banana.
And just holding... the fruit of the banana in his hand.
In his hot fist. Just like...
As they pass a garbage can, which is in the forefront of the picture.
Oh, you're right. And Sister has a purse. Sister has a purse over her shoulder that's just a box that says candy on it. Like, she has her own candy tote. Mama has a bag of peanuts sticking out of her purse. And
I think that's a candy bar.
Her brother is eating what seems to be a log of sausage. It's about the length of his head. It's the world's largest candy bar. It reminds me of the picture where you thought brother had an apple in his mouth. But it was his own arm. 3/4 perspective of brother with his mouth open. It will undo you every time.
I just want to point out that peanut shells and banana peels are biodegradable waste.
But it seems that in 7 yards they've walked, Sister has eaten 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and she's on her 7th piece of candy. And this is a book that takes place after the Berenstain Bears and too much junk food. Like, at least Mama and Papa are eating bananas and peanuts, but brother and sister are, like, choking down the worst candies. So, yes. And then the poem at the beginning features a bottle, a soda cup, a Chinese takeout container, and a can of soda being thrown. So, yes.
I thought that was underwater, but, yeah, they are being thrown.
They are being thrown.
Got it.
But it does look underwater, the way the plants. But I guess there's no, like,
no fish.
Wheat in the in your underwater world. Finally, another finely done Berenstain Bears book. Mark Sweeney, thank you so much for joining me.
Hey, you're welcome, Phil.
Again, remind our listeners, if they live or are going to be anywhere near the Twin Cities area later this year.
Yeah.
What your upcoming project is.
Oh, I'm in Rated G, the family-friendly musical, Saturday nights at 6 o'clock at Huge Theater on 31st and Lindale, starting March. I'm sorry, March and April, 6 o'clock at Huge Theater on Saturday nights.
Like you said, family-friendly.
Family-friendly improvised musical. It kind of takes on a hero's journey, animated sort of feel to it.
Yeah.
Kind of fantastic fantasy. That's what I'm looking for. Fantasy, yeah. And also, by the time this comes out, I will have been a company member of Savage Umbrella Theater Company.
Wonderful.
So that's my other big news, and I'll probably have more news about that in the future.
Good. We'll have to have you on so you can share more news about your upcoming projects.
Sounds good.
Yes. If you're looking for more me, I am also on the It's Del Toro Time podcast that I host with my teenager, Ollie. We discuss the films of Guillermo del Toro and also the films of the people he considers his greatest influences. I am also on a podcast called Click It Cast, a Beverly Cleary podcast with John McCoy, where we have been discussing the works of Beverly Cleary and angering people with our opinions on The Mouse and the Motorcycle, apparently. The people were not happy with that Mouse and the Motorcycle episode. It's a hot controversy. So check it out. And you can see what we said that made people so furious about our book, about our opinions, about a book, about a mouse that rides a motorcycle and gets a boy an aspirin. Otherwise, that is it for this week. Thank you once again, Mark, for joining me.
You're welcome.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. And I will see you all next time deep in Bear Country.